Okay, good morning. There has been a number of pictures from the album of Freedmotion shown during this this workshop up to now. I would like to add one more. This is one of the earliest laser-induced fluorescent pictures taken in from a turbulent jet by Paul Dimotakis. And we see a couple of interesting things there. It's obviously a very complicated object. There are fronts, cliffs, more or less oriented in a random manner, maybe isotropically, probably all the more isotropically that the Reynolds number is increased, as we learned from Zelman Warraft yesterday. But still, there is a large scale structure in this object, and it is clear that if one makes a difference of the concentration levels in the scalar field for distances which compare to the size of the jet, the boundaries will be felt one way or another, even at very large Reynolds number. So the attitude towards the understanding of such an object, the turbulent jet, could be to see it as it is and say why, or to see it as it never was and say why not. Let me explain to you what I mean. The idea that I will follow during this talk is to understand how this object has been built. This is clear and well known that a jet is something which is entraining out of fluid from the outside inside the core of the jet. And the question I will ask today is, can we mimic this object as the sum of the contributions of elementary sources at the edge of the jet? The sources, what will be the signature of one source? What is the source? What is the composition law between two sources, and how do they have to be located at the edge of the jet to by their composition make the real scalar field in the turbulent jet? So there are in fact three questions, three stages. The first stage is what is the source, and how is it characterized? Second question is, what is the composition law between two sources? And the third question is, how do we have to organize the sources in space in order to recreate a turbulent jet? Let me be a little more precise. What will we will be looking at histograms of concentration fluctuations, or temperature fluctuations, if heat is mixed in the jet. I will try to recreate or to understand how the PDF of concentration fluctuation is at the center line of the jet. I mean, we are not obliged to be at the center line of the jet. It is very interesting also to have an idea of the histogram of concentration elsewhere from the center line, but I will stick to the center line. And in particular, the two things I will try to justify is why is this concentration PDF manifestly skewed towards the negative values. This is a striking feature. What is its variance? What is its width? How can we understand its width? And an interesting small effect, but measurable effect, why is the width of the PDF clearly increasing as the measurement point moves downstream? So these are the questions I will try to address at the end. As I said, yes, I will not be talking about that, but it's very interesting also to investigate the complete evolution of the concentration PDF moving the measurement point from the center line, which is this PDF, towards the edge. How can we understand the deformation of the PDF as the measurement point moves? There is no reason why the measurement point on the center line should be privileged compared to another. But this I will not address. So the first part, response of one source. What is a source? So let me just show you how we make a source. We are in a turbulent jet, which is used here as a turbulence generator. And via a small tube, we inject locally a scalar, which can be a fluorescent dye, as the experiments we saw before this morning, but which can be also heat in water or heat in air, so that the Schmidt or Prandtl number is varied for this experiment, can be varied for this experiment. In fact, these are three different experiments as you vary the Schmidt number. So what do we see just downstream of the injection point? This is the injection point, and this is farther downstream. This is a picture of a fluorescent dye. This is a cut through the medium, since this is a laser-induced fluorescence picture. Yes, thank you. And what happens is first a stage where a molecular diffusion does not come into play. This is a stirring stage. We had an interesting linguistic discussion this morning. Not much diffusion has occurred at that point, but farther downstream, of course, molecular diffusion has set in, and at one point in the medium, there is a very large, a broad distribution of concentration levels. Some parcels of fluid still bear the injection concentration, whereas others, in the vicinity of it, by the way, have already been so stretched that they almost fade away in the medium. So this is clearly a regime which is dominated by molecular diffusion, and this is a regime where the fluctuations of concentration decrease, whereas in the first stages they have increased. This is very similar to what Patrick Tabling showed this morning. This is a transient experiment, built to be a transient experiment, in order to understand all the stages of the uniformization, dispersion, and uniformization of the scalar in the medium. For instance, the length of the contour of this blob first increases, then saturates, and then decreases as molecular diffusion sets in. This is very similar to what you showed. So, in order to be a little more quantitative, as I said, I am interested in PDFs, and I want to represent the PDF in a whole turbulent jet. So this is the PDF coming from the source I have just shown. For three different experiments, an experiment involving a weakly diffusing dye, high Schmidt number, heat in water, and heat in air. At a given location downstream, these are the three PDFs corresponding to the three different experiments. Of course, the weakly diffusing dye presents a wider PDF than the most diffusing dye. Of course, this is not counterintuitive. But what is interesting to note is that you have seen on the previous transparency that the scalar field is very intermittent, made of sheets bearing concentration levels which are very different, and the PDF is very large, very intermittent, and characterized by a quasi-exponential decrease, quasi-exponential tail, for the large excursions in the concentration. And what is interesting? One? What is? C naught is the injection concentration. Okay, so this is normalized by the injection concentration. C naught is one. So what is interesting in order to make this this study quantitative is to follow the evolution of the shape of the PDF parameterized by the argument of this exponential tail as time evolves, that is, as the downstream distance from the injection point increases. This is an advected flow. We are sitting in a turbulent jet, so that distance and time are related by the mean velocity. And what is observed is that the argument of this PDF gradually increases with distance or with time, linearly increases with time, with an argument which is all the more large that the Schmidt number is low. The route towards uniformity is more and more rapid, all the more rapid than the dye is strongly diffusing. This is not concurrent with it at all. The interesting thing also is that this mixing time, let's say that this is the mixing time, this is the time which prescribes the route towards uniformity, is proportional to the injection diameter divided by the root mean square velocity in the medium, d over u prime. And it is independent of the Reynolds number. There is, among these points, a factor of 50 in the Reynolds number, different Reynolds numbers. Okay? It is independent of the Reynolds number. The mixing time is just d over u times a function of the Schmidt number, of course, an increasing function of the Reynolds number. The mixing time is infinite for a dye which is not diffusing, of course. The same, since the velocities are adapted. So the factor is the same. And the Reynolds numbers are always above 10 to the 4, u prime L over nu. So this gives an R lambda a little bit larger than 100. So the function of the Schmidt number is a weak increasing function of the Schmidt number, something like a logarithm or a small power, whatever. This is not crucial. What is crucial, in fact, is indeed is the fact that this function exists, that it is an increasing function. And that the mixing time is proportional to the injection size of the blob divided by the stirring large-scale velocity in the medium. To make this clearer, so this is the argument of the decrease of the exponential tail of the PDF as a function of time. This is the rescaling I was just showing. This is for one Schmidt number 2000. And for different sizes, with a factor of 3 from the smallest to the largest size. So there is the points collapse, whereas if you try a rescaling consistent with the Kolmogorov ideas, where the mixing time would be something like the cascade time, we see that by no way the points collapse. This fact has an interesting counterpart in the spectral properties of this scalar. The scalar field is by no way describable along the lines of Korsin and Obukhov. The spectrum is k to the minus 1, and the mixing time, in fact, is much shorter than the cascade time, so that there is a kind of a short circuit from the injection towards dissipation and uniformity, but this I won't describe in detail. The important thing of this first part, the response of one source, is that the PDF is exponential. It has a decay rate fixed by the size of the injection of the scalar and the stirring large field velocity. Well, this is the Bachelor regime. This is fully a Bachelor regime, although if k to the minus 1 refers to the Bachelor regime, although the injection size of the scalar always lies in the inertial range of scale, even for the smallest one. So, we have seen very rapidly what is one source. Let us try to compose two sources now and see what... What? If k to the minus 1 is a translation of what a Bachelor regime is. I mean, it's a question of terminology at this point. So let us compose two sources now. So we are still in a jet. The jet is the turbulence generator. And we put dye not only in one injection tube, but now in two injection tubes. And we are, of course, interested in what's going on over there. Can the fluctuations in this, the concentration fluctuations in this region be understood in terms of what we have learned from the from one source? What can we expect a priori? Well, it seems obvious that if the measurement point is either in one plume or in the other, the plume being what emerges from one jet, one injection source, well, the resulting PDF in the signal will be simply a weighted sum of the two PDFs. In fact, the two plumes do not interact at all. The measurement point is just sitting either in one or in the other. This is the regime of anti-correlated sources that has been in another context documented by Zelman-Warraff in particular, also with two in great turbulence. Now, if the injection point is sufficiently far downstream so that the plumes have actually interacted and diffused within each other, then what can we expect? Well, the probability to find a concentration level at one point will be the probability to have a concentration C1 at that point times the probability of having concentration C2 at that point, provided that C1 plus C2 equals C, and this for all the combinations C1 and C2. This is just a convolution of the PDF of the first source by the PDF by the second source. So this is just a linear composition, but be careful. This is, of course, valid, provided C1 plus C2 is smaller than 1, which is the injection concentration of each of the sources. This we will expect to hold in the diluted limit, and this is, for this precise experiment, what happens. So don't be afraid by the multiplicity of the graphs. This is very simple. These are exactly the two identical series of graphs, one in lin-lin coordinates, the other one in log-lin coordinates. The distance from the injection point, the injection location of the two sources, increases from top to here. So what do we see? How does the experiment has been made? We first record one signal with one source running, another signal, concentration signal, with the other source running and the other not running. We have the signals. We make the two sources running, construct the PDF, and try to find what is the composition between the two signals that we have to make to have the final signal when the two sources are running. So we have to compose the two signals first as anti-correlated for short distances, and then as the distance is increased, there is an inversion. The anti-correlated sources composition is not good anymore, but the convolution beats over to represent, in the end, the complete PDF. Note that this PDF is no more a pure exponential, or close to a pure exponential, since it is the convolution of two exponentials, so it is more round. But still, it bears the memory of the original PDFs through this tiny exponential-like tail. So this was for one Schmidt number. For the other Schmidt number, I will show two only, because I think this is convincing enough. So lin-lin log-log. Lin-lin is just to show that we pick up the mean very, the maximum very, very precisely with the convolution operation. And log-log is just to emphasize the tail, of course. So the same. First, the anti-correlation composition holds, and then the convolution leads to have perfect agreement at the end. Okay, so this is this looks very simple. We have characterized one source, then discovered the composition law of two sources. It remains for us to distribute the sources at the edge of a jet in order to recreate the whole field. But a jet, a turbulent jet, as you know, is something which is not planar, it's not two-dimensional, it's three-dimensional, and it has an axisymmetric symmetry. So in order to take into account this, we have to inject the scalar preserving this axisymmetry. This is the reason why we are not dealing anymore with punctual sources or tubes, but with a slab. So in fact, the jet crosses, goes through a slab in which there is dyed fluid. So this is the reason. You know, you have never seen a jet like that. So let's see things as they never were. So they never were like that. The slab is filled with dyed fluid in order to preserve this this axisymmetry. So we are in fact looking for the source response we know very well, and there are of course two parameters in this problem: the distance of the slab counted in units of the injection diameter of the jet, and the width of the slab. How, for a given distance, do we have to choose the width of the slab in order to recover the exponential-like signature of one source? The answer is the following. So the PDFs are, as you can see, awful. They are not converged very well. The reason is that a jet is an in-training object, and that this slab empties as the experiment goes on. So the time allowed for this experiment is short, so that the PDFs are not properly converged. But anyway, this graph shows that the width has to be proportional to the distance from the injection diameter. The proportionality factor is 1/3, and this what for different distance downstream, showing that there is a similarity. This is just the traduction of the fact that the jet is a self-similar object which is developing with diameter increasing linearly with distance. The slab has to be twice larger at a distance twice larger from the injection diameter. Okay. Now, how do we have to compose the concentrations among the slabs? Well, in the self-similar development of the jet, the flow rate carried by one by the jet is such that the untrained flow rate is proportional to it. So it's independent of the location of the construction of this of this graph. So if I do this construction here or there, simply the untrained flow rate is proportional to the carrier flow rate. This is just the traduction of the self-similarity of the development of one jet. So the concentrations will be composed in the following manner. This represents the volume carried by the jet, and this represents the volume of untrained fluid from the outside. The concentration of the final operation is simply in the ratio of the volume in presence. Now, let us imagine that we start with a concentration which is not zero, but which is C2, and we add again the same amount relative to the volume V of concentration C equal 1. What will be the final concentration? There is a simple mass balance which shows that if we add an amount which is the same, proportionally the same as in the first operation, then the concentration will be such that wine minus C will be equal to the product of 1 minus C1 by wine minus C2. This is interesting because in the domain of the inverted concentrations, the composition law between the concentrations will just be a multiplication. And you note that this composition operation, which holds for any concentration, amounts to the, or is consistent with the composition law of the convolution we had in the diluted limit. But this holds for any concentration level. So we have to work in the inverted concentration domain. This was the original response of a seeded slab in a non-seeded jet. So the response of a non-seeded slab in a seeded jet will be exactly inverted. And these are the PDFs we have to compose in a multiplicative manner. We are close to the end, in fact, since we have decided to represent a jet as a succession of slabs whose width has been determined. The width is proportional to the downstream distance. Since the width is proportional to x, then the number of slabs we have to put at a given distance downstream is simply proportional to the logarithm of this distance. The moments of the distribution C star, are the piece moment, is such that it is the product of the moments of the n sources, but since the sources are independent by definition of what a decorrelated slab is, the piece moment is simply the moment of one source whose response is universal raised to the power n. Then this provides the successive moments of p of c star, mean, variance, qness, etc., and therefore of the PDF of the global jet. So I could show you a PDF with the resulting computed PDF from the elementary source, but it is more interesting to discuss the moments, because there have been measurements on the moments, particularly by Bowling and Dimotakis, who made the compilation of the fluctuating RMS concentration normalized by the mean concentration in the jet as a function of the downstream distance. This graph has, to my knowledge, remained an enigma in the fluid mechanics community. We were not very clear to explain why this ratio, C prime over C bar, was increasing in the jet, although quite large distances downstream from the outlet were concerned. For instance, at 30 diameters downstream the injection of the jet, the development is already self-similar with a well-defined opening angle. It was not clearly understood why this ratio C prime over C bar was still increasing. The reason is very simple, and we know the answer, in fact, from the previous slide. The reason is that the number of elementary sources contributing to the structure of the scalar field increase logarithmically with x. So it increases at the beginning very rapidly, and then after, for large distances, less rapidly. And this is made clear here also, because together with x, I have put the number of slabs. There is a logarithmic relation between the two axes, at the beginning it increases rapidly, and then after you see that the increasing rate is reduced, so that C prime increases very, very slowly, precisely because of this logarithmic dependence. I am coming to the skewness now. There are less measurements on the skewness. The skewness is the skewness of the concentration PDF. I have been talking about that only. There are less measurements of that because it's more difficult. The PDF has to be well converged and so on. But there is, I think, an agreement in the literature to say that in the far field, it is close to minus 0.6. Our prediction is that it has to increase for the same reason as described previously, and that indeed in the far field, in the 100 diameters downstream, the value of minus 0.6 is not completely out of the range. Okay, so let me finish by summarizing what we have learned. Mixing is in essence a transient process from the initial segregation towards the ultimate uniformity. There is no, at any moment, there is no steady state. It's always a transient process. But in the course of this evolution, the structure of a complex field results from the composition of elementary contributions. And in fact, when you probe a field, you decide to probe the structure of the field in its transient evolution. But you cannot forget the fact that it is transient. These contributions reflect the entrainment, large-scale properties of the flow, which persist in the statistics, and which cannot, in fact, be forgotten anytime. Thank you. Yes. But it is smaller. The velocity is. Oh yeah, yeah. The velocity decreases like 1/x in a jet. The width of the slab compensates this effect, since it is it is larger. Yeah. Yes, but the flux is U times D square. Yes. Yeah. In the mean they are in the mean they are constant. Yeah. No. Because the statistics are averaged in time, and we need average fluxes, mean fluxes. Mm-hmm. No. The response of the source is established with fixed injection rates, always. So what we need in the real problem is the an idea of the average entrained flux in order to make the extrapolation. So why 1/3? Well, it could be a half, or it's a proportionality constant.